Blog Talk Radio.
Hold it now!
American Issues and Solutions presents Black Urban America. I am your host. I'm Kenny Jones. The call-in number is 909-265-9215. For those who are listening by laptop and may want to make a comment or ask a question, the call-in number is 909-265-9215. Our lineup for the week, Saturdays, we have Provocative Thought that come at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time with Cough to Sneeze. Of course, Tuesday nights, we have Black Urban America, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Also, on Wednesday, we have Elephant in the Room by Jaco Zulu at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time Wednesdays. Every third Tuesday of the month, we have Calm Down. Now let's discuss racism. And starting next month, next Tuesday is going to be an interesting show. We have two guests with two different thoughts that are going to discuss U.S. immigration. The second Tuesday of the month, starting in January 2019. Yes, 2019. A show will be called Healthy Relationship. It'll come on every second Tuesday of the month. Now, I don't know where my tonight guest is. He has not called in. Oh, I think he did. Tonight, I have a guest. His name is Hakeem. Huh?
I said, I'm here, my brother.
Okay. I'll give a introduce you.
Okay.
He runs a cultural Afrocentric after school program. Please say the name. The
Mujahideen de Baja Leadership Academy.
Okay. And this is I call you Professor Shaquem Hyatt.
Shakim Amin Aket.
Shakim Aket. How you doing,
yes,
brother Aket? Welcome to Black Earth America.
Man, I'm feeling magnificent, brother. I appreciate you for having me on, man. It's always a pleasure and an honor, brother.
Thank you. Since we almost at the end of the year, and I kept on trying to get to, well, what you want to discuss? What you want to discuss and everything? He said, man, I could discuss anything and everything. And I came, I said, this is the end of the year. Let's talk about some of the major issues that affect our communities across this nation that may be important to us. Then in the next year, we really have to start determining some solutions to some of these issues we're going to discuss tonight.
Right. Well, the issue that I'm facing right now that I'm actually working on, you know, I do have a media website and I do video called the South Carolina Herald News. I'm actually doing an article right now. So, you know, we're in the Gullah Geechee Corridor. The area I'm in South Carolina, especially Charleston, a lot of you are pretty familiar or may be familiar with the Gullah Geechee heritage or the culture.
Yes, I am.
Gullah Geechee people, yes. So we are
explain
the descendants
that,
of those, right, who came from, you know, West Africa. And a lot of our people in the area, they fought, they escaped. You had the Gullah Wars, which are misnomered the Seminole Wars. We had the Stono Rebellion, which was a lot of Africans grouping up together to resist and fight slavery. So a lot of the tales and folklore in the local area, in the community that's oral, the traditions, it comes down from Africans who say that they resisted as soon as they got off the boat. So what happened is we had certain areas and certain pockets of land that we own as a people, and we call it the Gullah Geechee Corridor. It actually extends from North Carolina all the way down to Florida. Nevertheless, recently what has been happening, especially in like Sullivan's Island, St. Helena Island, the Beaufort area, Georgetown in South Carolina, there's been issues where the people who have died or the great-grandfathers and great-grandmothers who have passed on the land, what has happened is that developers are coming in, they're building golf resorts, they're building condominiums, they're building hotels. The area is prime real estate because it sits on the water. So what they've been doing is revamping the marshlands or the wetlands and building all of these waterways and these thoroughfares, and they've been going through what they call beautification. So what is happening
really,
is kind of...
It's really a high-tech gentrification.
Oh, definitely high. It's definitely high-tech gentrification. And there's several ways that they're achieving this. So in a city council meeting that was had about 2-3 months ago, the city actually mandated that some of the residents who had the land install water systems because they basically got the water on their own. But the city came in and said, hey, you have to utilize a city-regulated pump in order for you to actually keep the land. That in turn made property taxes go up, and a lot of them had to actually lose their property. I was contacted by a mother who, this was like last week, she contacted me and reached out and said she needs somebody to, you know, come into the next council meeting because the city's trying to take their land. So what's happening is either A, the city is doing things like increasing property taxes, they're through building and through so-called revitalization, or they're just coming outright. And when the parent dies or whoever, grandfather, grandmother died, whoever inherits the land, they're like, okay, we give you $500,000 for this land. And the sibling is like, or the child is like, okay, we'll take $500,000. And next thing you know, you got $1 million condominiums popping up.
Wow. And we probably came in for the property. They're going to jack the prices so high, and it's only going to be for upper income folks.
Right. And most of the people who are purchasing the land, well, you know, this is an affordable housing that they're talking about building. This is luxury housing. So you have houses that are, you know, upwards of $1 million, $2 million, especially because of the location of the real estate being on the ocean. You know, this is oceanfront property that, mm-hmm. you know, they're renovating. So, you know, in this area with the medium income, especially for black folks around 40, 30,000, you're not going to get anybody who is coming in and just putting $2-3 million down on a 3-4-story mansion. So it's looking real ugly. And, you know, we kind of pride ourselves on having that Gullah Geechee history and that culture. You know, it's a lot of tradition that we have. So we kind of pride ourselves in that. And as you see it actually waning away, you see the language kind of dissipating. You used to hear people kind of, you know, put on a little Gullah Geechee accent, man. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's you know, that fast talking kind of what they call broken English dialect.
Right.
All of that is actually leaving out as the people are being driven out of their homes and the land that we've had ever since we can remember.
Where are they going? Where are the folks going? Where are they moving to?
Well, that's a good question. So, like I said, a large piece of it is what they're doing is they're strategically waiting until they're buying what we would refer to as heirs' property.
Mm-hmm.
So heirs' property is their best chance for them to pull off this type of gentrification. So the scenarios that I've been hearing are, you know, just say you have an aunt that stays on St. Helena Island here in South Carolina on the water, and your aunt or your great-grandmother passes away. You know, all of a sudden, you know, you might have moved to Chicago or New York or, you know, Pittsburgh, L.A., you somewhere in Louisiana somewhere, and you got a developer say, hey, you know, this property that your great-grand-aunt left, we want to offer you $500,000 for the property. So with a lot of the heirs, they don't have a connection to the property. A lot of it they feel is not developed anyway because it's just basically land with a house on it. And since they're so detached away from the historical significance of the property and they don't understand how, you know, the history and the sacredness of the area, since they lack that understanding of history, they go ahead and sell for $500,000 in hopes that they can enrich in themselves, and they don't really truly have a tie to the region. So that's the prime opportunity for developers to come in and claim stake to the land. Now,
if that information that the developer has for the heirs, do you guys have that same information?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah. So have people been trying to reach out to the heirs that's in different parts of the country and world and tell how important that to keep? Look, for the last 10, 15 years, we lost a lot of major black communities across the country, like Harlem. I mean, Harlem, they made movies about Harlem. North Philadelphia, Washington D.C., you know, and many others, and really tried to express that you got to keep the land in our hands.
Right.
Because land is still power.
Right. And it's been successful thus far. There was an article that was written in the city paper about maybe a month ago where they actually were talking to one of the heirs of the property. And when you start talking about six figures, if a person doesn't really have anything and the land in and of itself is what they call, you know, a barren, or, you know, you just got like a big old 3-4-5 acre piece of property sitting out there in an old house with no, you know, water, no, you know, water well that's, you know, I would say city operated and owned. I mean, they really kind of see it like, you know, well, I'm going to just take $500,000. So I think ultimately the money is the driving force. So we haven't really been able to combat the big pockets of the developers who buy heirs property. So it's really been unsuccessful thus far.
Wow, so it looks like we're going to, because once you see the bulldozers, it's definitely too late.
Yep. Once you see the bulldozer, too late. Yeah, once you see the bulldozer, that's a wrap.
Yeah.
That's a wrap.
It's too bad we lose another community.
Man, it's horrible, brother. And like I said, what makes it even, you know, so treacherous is the fact that, you know, it's a lot of stories and oral tradition tied into the area. And this just happens all over the country where, you know, they start digging, and they find African burial grounds.
Right,
you know, and
right.
They find, you know, so that's happened so many times in this area where they found African burial grounds. So, you know, with us not having, you know, that spiritual connection to our ancestors, we just don't see the significance of it, and we just kind of like, you know, oh, well, let me get the quick dollar. So that's just one of the issues that, you know, have been really weighing down on us, especially activists here locally. It's sad to see the stories, and, you know, it just causes us a lot of pain and frustration because it seems like it's in the tide. There's really nothing that, you know, we can do. I mean, we can attempt, but, I mean, it's really been hurting.
Wow, I am very saddened by that.
Right.
Professor, can you explain what your academy is all about?
Okay, so wonderful. So the academy was actually started in honor of my partner, man, like a brother to me, man, named Muhyiddin Dabaha. He
mm-hmm.
was an activist here. I mean, we went through all kind of different demonstrations and civil disobedience. He was the one who, Baden Santana, who recorded the incident of Walter Scott getting shot 8 times in the back.
Mm.
Baden Santana, who recorded the video, he actually gave it to my partner, Muhyiddin. And we had the video over the weekend. Then we released it to the police, to law enforcement, per request of the family. And it was turned over to the lawyer first, of course, and then, you know, it turned over to law enforcement. But brother, man, after the Dylann Roof incident, when Senator Clementa Pinckney was assassinated here in the city also, we fought hard and long for deeper investigations into the activities of Dylann Roof. We believe that Dylann Roof was not a lone assassin like they painted him out to be.
Uh-huh.
We understood that, right, he had been brainwashed and taught that type of philosophy and ideology. We don't think he was a lone gunman, so we was very active in that case. He actually went down to Mardi Gras. He went down to New Orleans for Mardi Gras, and he was murdered. So it's kind of rough, man, even me talking about it. So what ended up happening is that we were all stunned, right? Because, I mean, you got a man, your homeboy, your right-hand man just goes down on vacation and says, yo, I'll be back. He goes to Mardi Gras and gets killed. All type of things were running through our mind. We didn't know if the police killed him. We didn't know what happened. So we started doing little mini investigations going down there. And what ended up happening is the guy who was with the guy turned himself in and told and said, hey, okay, so what he said is that it was mistaken identity. My partner, they thought he was somebody else who they was going to rob. And he was riding, my partner was riding his bicycle going back to where he was staying at. And the guy jumped out, tried to rob him, and shot him in the leg. and my partner died on his way to the hospital.
My goodness.
Yeah, man.
And you know, since you touched on shootings, assassination, that has, it still has not died down. In fact, it appears that from 2015 to 2017, we make up the, we're more likely to be shot by police than any other outlaws. You know, and another thing that's really, that really gets me, we make up black and Latinos, black and brown men, we make up on nearly half of the shooting. Nearly, not half, but almost half of the shootings. I mean, this has been a common theme. We have been addressed it. I mean, professor athletes addressed it. Different black corporations addressed it. Black advocates have addressed it. I addressed it. My shows like this addressed it. I mean, like, what, going into 2019, you know, how can people, you know, different organizers and advocates, cause I'm going to have them on my shows in the upcoming year. What do you think are some of the solutions that need to happen? And it's happening all over the country. Low-income, black low-income areas, black middle-income areas. And I'm far-fetched to say it probably happened. Going to happen, black upper income areas. So, what's some of the what can people, laymen, advocates, organize? And I think we need to start thinking outside the box. What can we do in order to try to prevent these shootings?
Well, where we started at actually was conflict resolution. Me and several individuals, we drafted up it's probably like 10 chapters of a conflict resolution course. So we did a few chapters on the school district in order for them to look at it and approve it. So we're waiting on that process of approval right now. So what the course actually does is it looks at different scenarios where real-life scenarios where individuals have maybe picked up a gun and shot somebody in an argument, they regret it. Different cases where people have basically lost their cool and just totally kind of went left and got into a bad scenario. So the course is actually broken down. It's grade-friendly, so it starts with the elementary school. So in the elementary school, it just talks about, it starts off with a little course on bullying. So, you know, it talks about if a child is being bullied, what are the steps to actually take in order to, resolve that conflict? Who are some responsible adults to identify? Who should you talk to, you know, in the event that, you know, it doesn't work out in school. So it just gives a lot of scenarios, and it gives a lot of case-by-case studies of incidents where people have done things unsuccessfully and are mournful, and it highlights areas where there are where people have done things successfully and have avoided conflict. So that was one of the things that we believe would be the best because, in my opinion, and from what I've seen, a lot of the gun violence doesn't necessarily, a lot of it does, but a lot of it doesn't necessarily have to deal with poverty. Like, we know situations where dudes just can't get along. They got beef, so they just go and pick up the gun. I'm gonna come see you. So they're not necessarily poor. It's not poverty that's driving it. It's the lack of their ability to swallow their ego and say, you know what, man, I ain't messing with you. And I've even kind of narrowed it down.
And that's very hard for a young person, for a young black man to do.
Right. Ooh, yes. And the thing
is, to walk away, That is
right.
Very, very difficult.
Man, difficult, bro. Very. So my philosophy is, if we teach, if it all starts with loving yourself, in my opinion, if you love yourself, you don't want to leave your child out on the streets and you doing 30 years in the penitentiary. If you love yourself, you don't want to wake up at 6 o'clock every morning for count. You don't want to have lights out 10 o'clock at night for lights out. You don't want to have to wake up and hear child time. You don't want to have to, you know, hear rec time. And have, you know, so if you love yourself, then you begin to say, you know what, this ain't worth it. Like, my life is too valuable to be spent, you know, in a jail cell.
In prison.
So I think,
forever.
Yeah. Right,
and the thing is, not only loving yourself, understanding yourself, it's all about the self-image. And a lot of negative imagery about us that's in media is being played out on the street, being the tough guy. Yo, man, a lot of tough guys are pushing up daisies are dead or in prison. Where you say, where they got to wake up 6 o'clock in the morning and tell when to go to the bathroom, when to take a shower, when to eat, when to read. So, yeah, it's about the image. I feel it's about the image too, of the black man. And I think that more brothers and sisters that are in Hollywood and writers or what have you, they really got to make a conscious effort to make more. I know they got to make their little money movie, but to make more stories, positive stories, because we contribute a lot to this country. We contribute a lot to our families. I'm talking about the black man in America. And if it wasn't for the black man in America, the United States wouldn't be where it is today.
That's why I actually started, you know, the academy, and that's one of the things I do try to teach at the academy is conflict resolution. We teach brothers and sisters that, you know, that's your brother, that's your sister. You know, if two youngsters get into an argument over some pencils or whatever, because they're still gonna argue. You know, we just kind of like say, hey, you know, find the root cause of it. You know, why are you engaging in this with, you know, your brother? Like, just kind of really, every scenario is kind of different. So we kind of sit them down and have them talk it out and, you know, give each other a high five or a pound or something like that, you know, at the end to let them know, you know what, you can resolve this peaceably without killing each other, and that's your brother.
You think this strategy will be carried on onto the streets, let's say the streets of 80 black neighborhood in America. You think this strategy could be carried on in the streets, especially your competition would be the gangs.
Right.
And the teenage drug dealers.
Right. And also, you know, billionaires who run BET and they run these multi-billion dollar companies and they can give brothers, you know, millions of dollars to push garbage.
Yeah.
So, you know, be up against them too. I think the strategy, it does seem quite overwhelming when you start looking at it, you know, holistically. But I just encourage myself by saying, okay, if I get one, you know, if I get one here, if I get one there, if I get one here. And that's kind of like how I keep my sanity, because with all of the murders and the shootings that happen, even across, I mean, everywhere, I mean, it's easily... you're easily able to get burnt out because, you know, somebody gets killed, you got a vigil, and stop the violence, you have a march, you release boom balloons in the air, or release a dove, back to the same thing next week. Then somebody
How about the next day? Or the next day, or an hour after the show is over? You know,
right.
And to me, all of that is symbolic. I know everybody more differently, but, you know, as far as my show, I try to get people to take action. And I think the reason why I asked that question, will this be a good strategy, like for a young teenager in Compton or Houston or Atlanta or New York or Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, Cleveland? Would this strategy work anywhere, or Miami, anywhere in the country?
Yeah,
because it could work in schools where you have a controlled environment, but can this strategy be taken to the corners of Baltimore?
Well, this is the thing, right? The younger you catch them, the better you are. It's almost like a disease. If you catch a disease in stage one, then your rate of survival is significantly higher than by the time you reach stage four. So when you start looking at the mentality of death that young people have, it's almost equivalent to cancer or terminal disease. So they don't just adopt this mentality overnight. It's actually bred into them, and it's actually become so much a part of them to where it becomes it becomes deadly. So I think if you started off early enough with the proper guidance and the proper implementation, I believe that it will work. However, as long as you go without treating that disease, then the higher the risk of somebody becoming a zombie. I was in robbery in 2003. I did 10 years in federal prison, well, really 8.5 out of 10 years sentence. I did 8.5 years in federal prison. Before I turned my life around, I was the same way, you know, hard-headed, ignorant, you know, just want to smoke reefer. And the bad part about it is, you know, I didn't have to take that route. And luckily, I made it out. And after I got out of prison, I said, you know what, enough is enough. You know, I can't afford to go back. I don't have another chance. Like, luckily, I had the OGs in the system that really kind of, like, especially the brothers in the nation, you know, I kind of, like, really started understanding discipline and how to carry myself by reading the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. I'm not in the Nation of Islam anymore for other reasons. However, my growth and development and understanding how to discipline and control myself can be attributed to Farrakhan and Elijah Muhammad. And
right.
That, you know, when I used to read the restricted laws of Islam, when he said, you know, no drinking, no smoking, no cursing, no hitting women,
right.
You know, no lying, no stealing. You know, when he would talk about those laws of Ma'at, as we would call them in ancient Africa or along the Nile Valley civilization, when Elijah was talking about that, you know, discipline, I believe that discipline is what's the critical element in us taking back our society. If we I remember I read a saying that said, a man who can't control his appetite can't be trusted because he'll do anything to eat. So, you know, and that applies to anything. If you can't control your appetite for sex, you can't control your appetite for television, you can't control your appetite for money, you can't control your appetite for food. If anybody who can't control their appetite, trust them. So that's how we have to look at discipline. And once we become disciplined women and men, then the enemy is really going to have a problem, because that's how they control us, through lack of discipline. That's how they control
us,
lack of discipline.
You think we are disciplined people in the age of 2019? In the form of fashion, food, lifestyle, education, especially education. You think we're disciplined people now? Are we becoming disciplined? Are we learning finally as a collective? I know there are a large percent of us are disciplined people, but I'll talk about as a collective. You think we are disciplined people to pull off that?
Well, okay. So
it's hard for the models, man. It's very difficult to keep these morals on a daily basis. No cursing. Respect your woman. Respect your man. Respect. Follow the law. You know, be a uplifted citizen. You know, control your own economics. Have your own educational system. You know, that I remember reading a message to a black man. He was breaking it all down that we really had to control our destiny and our communities.
Right.
And
right.
The way by doing that is having your own.
Right. So let me
around, we got to go to City Hall. We got to go to the State House. We got to go to the White House. And can we do this? Can we start this? Man, forget asking. We have to, like Nike, just do it. Organize and do it. And I think that not only will you go back to loving yourself and the self-image, you also got to include a collective self-confidence within us.
Right.
That we
can
pull this off, that we can have our own businesses, that we can hire our own people, we can teach our own children. I mean, other cultures do it, the Hasidic Jews, the Asians, the Indians for India. I mean, they do it every single day. They have their own properties in towns and cities. And what Chinatown? Police ain't going up Chinatown and shooting their teenagers.
Right.
So, if we, just to piggyback off you, what you're saying, if we can, we have start demonstrating respect for ourselves, respect for our children, you know, and that conflict resolution strategy, you know, leaving your child, he 2 or 3 years old, and you ain't going to see him till he like 30. You know, that's almost abusive there. But we have to start taking our own responsibility. And all this conflict resolution that you talk about not only should be restricted to your neighborhood and community, it should be spread out nationally. That's why I keep on asking, can it work anywhere with any teen? The reason why I say teenagers, because they start recruiting them at 11, 12 years old.
Yeah.
You know, so, I feel that that we have lost our discipline somewhere. I don't know, copying other cultures, not accepting your own culture. How about this? Now, not knowing who your culture is.
Right.
Like, you explaining your section of South Carolina, right? And you could pinpoint Western Nigeria. You could go, like mentally, emotionally, and physically from present to historically ancient times. Western Nigeria and find somehow, this village, I don't know, ten generations ago, starting here, was taken from here. That is a powerful statement. That is powerful right there. And that start knowing who you are and having not the media culture attributes, but the true culture attributes of what you should be following and how you should be conducting oneself.
Right.
Professor, spend a little more about your Academy Center before we got a couple of minutes. I just really want you to go in detail about your Leadership Academy. I think it sounds very good. I think what you're trying to do really has to be spread out throughout the country.
Yes, sir. Well, Academy basically is African Center. So by African Center, we teach from an African Center perspective. So all the images that the children see, we want them to be black. We want the books, the children's books that I order, we want them to be black. The lessons, we teach, we everything is kind of just centered on our success and our culture as a people. So what that does is psychologically gives them somebody to look up to who looks like them, and we can give them vision, we can give them focus. You know, whenever we talk about history, we just don't talk about, oh, you know, you was running around with in Africa with bones in your noses. We teach them about the Mali, Songhe, Ghana dynasty. You know, we teach them about Nile Valley civilizations. We teach them how we are the architects of a lot of the modern-day disciplines like medicine and law. You know, we talk about how we, you know, civilized Europe and how we brought them out of the Dark Ages. And we teach them how the Greeks looked up to the Africans. You know, so what we want to do is teach them the real history. Now, I do have black people who come in and say, man, you know, man, I don't want my kid with all that black stuff and this and that. They're going to be learning that black stuff. And it's disappointing to hear that, right? But my response always is, when you sent your child to elementary, to the middle school today, in the school, the local school district, did you tell that teacher that you don't want to hear that white stuff today?
You don't want to hear about the cherry tree and how Lincoln freed the slaves and whatnot. You want to hear that bullcrap. I shouldn't say bullcrap. You want to hear that side of history, but they have to understand there's another side of history. Do you feel that because a lot of our schools in our community are not African-centered, you think that's why we lose a lot of teenagers every year dropping out or not really having a plan for adulthood?
Right. It's definitely that. And, you know, I was a student concern specialist at a school here locally. Now, let me tell you this. A lot of schools that are all black, black run, black managed, black principal, black assistant principal, black school board members, black teachers, black everything. A lot of schools that are like that, they have the potential to turn it around. Because, in all honesty, the district is not in the classroom 24/7. So if you have the right group of teachers, in all honesty, you can actually slip in the public school system, a lot of African-centered material. The teacher
right.
does.
Right. But guess what? A lot of our educators come from white institutions.
Right.
It's not like they come from the historically black institutions. They come from white institutions where, being miseducated on a high level of learning.
Right. And then this is the thing. So now we got to ask ourselves, you know, why aren't all of the black Facebook scholars, why didn't they go into, and why haven't they gone into teaching? Because less than 3% of teachers are black men. So if black men, if we're complaining about the state of education, why aren't black men going into the classrooms and making teaching a profession? That's
barriers. I think there might be some barriers. You know, I feel there's some barriers. Not only barriers, you'd be surprised. There are stigmas. They reach out and request us to join their fields, like social workers, child psychiatrists, and educators. But we come into these institutions with we almost got 2 strikes already. But they have, again, the image of them. We're still the modern-day boogeyman. Look, white men been beating up their women for centuries. But guess what? We become the face of domestic violence. White men been hitting their children for centuries. We become the face of child abuse, physical abuse. White men been raping their women for hundreds and hundreds of years, and what they do, they send a black man to prison. How about the other white guys that got busted, like Matt Lowry, Weinstein, and them? We are the modern day boogeyman. And that's why I feel the stuff that you're talking about this evening needs to go national. You know, that I know you got to start in your own territory, but I really, really will hopefully that you expand. You know, from your state to the southeast into the north, you know how that goes.
Appreciate
so,
that,
Professor, I enjoy our discussion. I would love for you to return and keep on finding ways to keep on developing solutions.
I appreciate you, brother. Thank you for having me on, man. I appreciate you 1,000%.
All right, and I will be in contact, brother.
Oh, man, you got my number, brother. I'm right here.
All right. I'm going to be calling.
Oh, no problem.
Have a good evening, brother.
Yes,
all right.
Take care, man.
All right, thank you.
Power.
All right, you too. Finally, I met someone that agrees with me. And even though the things that I say are a little controversial, a little leftist, but I sometimes I walk here, I might be the only one to think like this, you know. But no, there are institutional people that think like me. And next week, again, we have a debate, and I'm going to be marketing over the social media about this debate between T. Nathan versus Dear West, two intelligent black men, but just disagree about a policy that may or may not affect us. So I want everybody to tune in next week. And again, and then for the last show of the year, I will have a classroom session. First time in 3-4 months. So there you have it. As always, I am because we are. We are because I am. Good night.
Hold it now! Shut them down.